Welcome to Teachings in the Air. Welcome to Teachings in the Air podcast with Jerry Oldman, coming to you from Hunkaminam territory with a podcast series about Indigenous men's health and wellness. We aim to inspire, motivate, and empower Indigenous men to be sound in mind, body, and spirit. Because that's what health means. This is Teachings in the Air with Jerry Oldman. Today's podcast is called Chilkch, which in my language means, can either mean number five or to come to the end. I found out, and I was asking one of my elders, I wanted to know how to say to come to the end. Because I'd name my sweat lodge just before I have a sweat. And I wanted to name one of them to come to the end, you know, to leave negativity or things behind. And she says, Jerry, Chilkch. And I looked at her, I said, no, Chilkch means five. And she says, Jerry, put up your hand and count. Point at your fingers and count. So I said, counting my fingers, Pala, Anwish, Klachash, Choching, Chilkch. Just like a light went off to come to the end of the hand, number five. So this podcast is in reference to Strong Mind. You know, the series is called Strong Mind, Strong Body, Strong Spirit, Strong Heart. So I thought I'd talk about strong mind today, you know, and I've been doing a lot of reflection about my mind, my brain. And I know that my brain, you know, stores knowledge, stores teachings. And nowadays I get hungry for teachings. I listen to speakers on YouTube, on TED's talks, co-workers. And I remember elders' voices. So there were memories of knowledge, is what I think about today. My mind is about experiencing the world through my senses. You know, see, hear, touch, taste, feel. You know, the senses comes through the mind. Experiencing the world. I have memories of people, of events, of activities. You know that as humans, as a human being, my behavior and my response to life, you know, is because of my memories, because of what happened in my life. You know, I remember at the beginning, I think about my childhood small, you know, when I was very young, you know, probably up till 5 years of age, I come from an inclusive home. We all shared chores. We all, you know, were part of the life in the house. And we lived in a small house built by my dad and his dad. They built the house. So we all slept upstairs under the roof, you know, and we all had to fix our bed, keep things tidy, you know, do chores, pack wood, cut kindling, feed the chickens, pack water, you know. It was inclusive. And I think about it, it was a good life. I was never hungry, didn't know fear, you know, it was good. I know one of my chores was to start the fire in the morning in the wintertime. It's cold, you know. So before we go to sleep, my dad would put the kindling and the fire starter beside the stove and the wood, small pieces of wood, you know, so I can start the fire. Early in the morning, I'd hear my dad's voice. Jerry Spamsham. Jerry Spamsham. And I'd hear him and I'd roll over and cover myself up. And he'd say again, Jerry Spamsham. So I'd jump up and run as a little boy. Run downstairs. Put the fire starter in there and the kindling on top. And then bigger pieces of wood and light the match. And light the fire. You could hear it crackling. And I'd close the door. And I'd run back upstairs and get under my blankets. And my mother would cook breakfast. You know, and I remember that it was totally safe. It was nourishing. It felt good. We were together. We were one. Those memories I have, you know, when I think of them, I smile, I feel good. I remember my oldest brother once, we were doing chores outside and we were moving wood and stuff, and there was a wheelbarrow. So he says, get on, Jerry, I'll give you a ride. I says, okay. So he's running, pushing me around in the wheelbarrow, and I was bouncing around and I was laughing. It was so joyous. And he hit this bump on the trail, and the wheelbarrow went, you know, flipped up into the air. And I flipped out of the wheelbarrow, and I landed on this pile of branches. And one of them just so happened it had a pointy end, and it embedded into my calf on my leg. I was laying there, I was crying, and I say, no, and my brother comes and picks me up and carries me to the house, to my mother. I remember hanging on to my brother in a concern in his voice, in his eyes, and I was hanging on to him. And my mother, you know, pulled the stick out, put medicine on there, patched it up. And it's okay, I still got a scar in my calf. And I see that. I remember my brother, my mother. See, that's a good memory. So our mind can store memories and experiences. You know, and as human being, my behavior and my responses in life, you know, come from those memories, from people in my life, from activities. So that's how I started. Those were my first memories. You know, living in this dwelling with my family and everything's good. Everything. And then all of a sudden I turned 6 And I don't remember them telling me I have to go to school. That's all I know is I remember I was walking into this building. And when I think about it, you know, it's my first exposure to Canadians, to white people. Because I was in a reservation, Sedan Lake Indian Band, they called it. It's my community, all Indigenous. So I go to the school, and that's when my memories changed. You know, it's a big event in my life. Because for the first time, I have no memory being taught multiplication and addition and subtraction. But I remember looking at this page. We got our little books back, you know, and all of the answers I put in on the arithmetic questions. There was red X's between everyone, beside every answer. The teacher gave me my work and started slapping me on both sides of my head. All of a sudden, I'm not in an inclusive atmosphere anymore. It's fearful. I'm scared now. I remember I told my parents, I don't want to go to school. I don't want to go back. They kept me home for a while, then they brought me back again. But my whole education experience in elementary school and high school was a fear-filled experience. My memories aren't good when it comes to education. You know, learning about arithmetic, reading and writing. Scared to make a mistake. So there I was, thrust into what I call a crazy new way of life. And it's so ironic that it's in the education system where I'm to get knowledge to help me with my life. Because that's what education's about. So now I know fear. I know shame now. Or I didn't know that in my house as a little boy. Now I start to hear messages in the air about my people. Now they're drunks. They're stupid. They're lazy. They're crazy. You know, that's a total new experience for me, hearing all of these. And what is my behavior? What's my response to hearing these messages and taking them in as a child? Of course, it was confusing. It was like I didn't see it as racism. I just seen it as meanness. These people are mean. You know, in the residential school, I'd never felt this kind of loneliness before, even though I'm surrounded by children and youth my age. It was like a lonely feeling. It was feeling of loss, of being afraid. You know, and of course, we formed bonds amongst each other, like I had friends there as the years went on, and we went through the experience together. But my memories, what I absorbed from there, I have little memory of the arithmetic, the English. Surprisingly, I was good at memorizing. I could memorize the French, for instance. I remember the teacher telling me, Jerry, I know you can do better. But I wasn't putting any effort into it. Because there are times I get 100% in my French exam. You know, for the most part, it was, I guess, survival, confusion, you know, as young people. So my behavior, I learned how to avoid. I guess some people call lying. How are you doing? Oh, I'm good. You know, but I'm avoiding talking about my fear, my anger, my depression. Because what happened is I became traumatized or I was wounded in my mind, my body, my spirit. My heart got weak. When I left that place, I turned to alcohol even before I left residential school. Me and my friends started drinking when they were 13 years of age. And I know most people probably start experimenting at that age. But I'd learned that it can be an escape. And it helped me avoid memories that were fearful, angry, shame-filled. And, of course, then I got into the drugs, too. So that was Jerry's mind. From this inclusive space, you know, joy-filled, content, trusting, to all of a sudden, fear, anger, depression. You know, like it wasn't 24/7. There's times my friends and I in residential school would be laughing, we'd make jokes, we'd do stories, we'd play soccer, we'd do those things. But there's this undercurrent, you know, that response to what was going on was happening inside too. You know, when we go through that that stress response, you know, and our body get into, we want to fight or flight or hide. And our body has chemicals that just rushes into our muscles and it sort of psychs us up to fight. All of a sudden we're filled with this energy or to run away as fast as we can. So that's a fight or flight response. So that's happening constantly, but I wasn't fighting and I wasn't running. I was staying there. So my body had these chemicals in there that were meant to help me to fight or run away. But I was just there. So that's when I started to get fidgety. When I started discovered cigarettes, I was chain smoking. I was drinking. I was doing drugs. You know, all of those things that were to escape. To not remember. So my mind had become weakened. It's like I was addicted to feeling sorry for myself. I remember I wanted to stop drinking. I could see the harm it was doing. And my thought was, I'll stop when somebody stops with me. I hope somebody says, hey, Jerry, let's quit drinking. Of course, that didn't happen. Then she had got to that place of being sick and tired of being sick and tired. And that's when the mind, you know, and I'm thinking about strong mind. It is strong. We can change our mind. We can start to think positive again. I did. I started to think positive. I changed. I remember the first, when I learned about this, I went to a workshop called Indian Is. And the facilitator was talking about affirmations and about, you know, about the mind. And he was talking about the power of mind. I remember one of the, like, he's telling stories, he's indigenous, he was a Sioux man from the Dakotas. And he's talking about, he says, okay, I have a $100 bill here. If I lay this plank on the floor, 6 inches wide, 10 feet long, he says, and I put it, that $100 bill at the end of the plank, I get you to stand there to walk towards it and pick it up and it's yours. You could do that. Probably very easy. You could probably even hop and skip and get there and pick up that $100 bill. But he says, now I put that plank 20 feet above the air and put that $100 bill at the end of the plank. You're going to change. And I got it. I got about the power of the mind. He says, you might crawl out to the end of the plank. Maybe you wouldn't even go up, you're afraid of heights. But it's your mind. Because it's the same plank. The only thing, it's up in the air. So he would tell stories like that. He was telling us, he says, garbage in, garbage out. Negativity comes in, you get it out of your mind. Reject it. Don't accept it. Garbage in, garbage out. He says, we need to start to say over and over and over again positive messages to wipe out the negativity. So he was talking about affirmations, about saying things over and over again that are positive. You need to give examples of people that would do that. He told a story about the bull rider, Brahma bulls. Oh, those are fierce creatures, you know. They're frightful. He's talking about this one bull rider, indigenous, would stand in front of the corral where the bulls are before he rides. He's standing there, he's dressed warm, got a sweater on. Standing there looking at the bulls. And the facilitator said he was watching him. And got his time to ride. So he went and got on the bull. And they nod and they let me have him and open the chute and out he goes and he rides a bull. And he makes he finishes the ride. The facilitator says, I went up to him after. I asked him, I seen you looking at those bulls. What were you doing? He says, oh, he says, I knew the bull I was riding, and I was looking at it, and I was saying in my mind, I beat you 100 times. I beat you 100 times already. I beat you 100 times. So he was doing the positive thinking. He was setting himself up for success. So that was an incredible workshop. One of the words that he used about addictions, he says, stand up and be counted. Stand up and be counted. Be part of the solution. So I took those words. And the other thing about this man, and he was cultural, he had a pipe ceremony with us, shared his pipe. Ah, that was a wonderful memory. Remember, memories are activities, are people. I have memories of that man and the activities and the words he used. Till today, it was the beginning of Jerry being free. Because we can be trapped in anger or fear or depression. I was trapped in anger, and at times fearful, and at times depressed. So he helped me with his words and his stories. That's when I seriously stopped. Because I'd been working at stopping drinking and drugging for a couple of years by the time I seen him. It was already in my mind that I wanted to stop. It was in my mind. I knew my mind was weak. So when I heard him, he gave me some tools, and those were affirmations, positive messages to say over and over again. Because I didn't like myself, thought I was a failure. One of my affirmations was, I am a lovable, capable man. I am a lovable, capable human being. I say it over and over again. Then, of course, garbage in, garbage out. He also said, when you get those negative thinking, say stop. Say stop, you know. Stop it. George Carlin said the same thing. Anyway, once in a while, you know, I get into this negative thinking. I say stop. I have to stop myself. So that was the start of my changing my mind. The second significant event that happened for me was this elder put me on the mountain, what some people would call a vision quest. It's actually about finding my purpose in life. What am I here for? What's my gift? And he put me there. I was sitting there for the first 2 days, you know, when I'm by myself, I talk to myself. I don't know if other people do it, but I do, you know, and I was saying, what you doing, Jerry? That's how I was talking to myself. And I would answer, like somebody's talking to me, you are fasting. And then my response would be, because I'm getting thirsty and hungry and having doubts. And I'd say, this is stupid. Why am I doing this? So for 2 days, my self-talk was like that. And the third day, fasting process is purification too, because your body is now eating the negativity in your system. Because you don't have food or water, so it eats. That's the way nature is. It's brilliant. Your body will eat a negativity first when there's nothing else to eat in the tummy. That's what I thought. That's what I believe. It's a purification to fasting. So the third day, the question, Jerry, what are you doing? And the answer came, I am fasting. And the whole experience changed. Now it's me having ownership of my life. Finally, I am fasting. And the whole experience changed. I could hear, you know, I could sense life around me. I remember I was sitting there, and it was sunshine outside, and it was May, and it was warm. I could hear this bzzz, bzzz, bumblebee. And I'm sitting in my lodge, it's dark in there, and I'm waving my hands around, thinking there's a bumblebee in the lodge. But it was outside. And I was sitting there, could hear the wind, could smell the fir boughs on the floor that the elder put there to tell me to sit on. He says, you're going to get bad breath as the fast goes on. So you take the tips of these fir trees, really nice and soft. He says, you just chew them. You just spit